Right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rafiki Village Project Benefit Concert, Friday, September 15th in Portland. The Rafiki Village Project Benefit Concert is a benefit for the Rafiki Village Project and will feature the Palente Latin Jazz Quintet and Afro Folk Project. Again, that's of the Rafiki Village Project Benefit Concert, Friday, September 15th at 6 p.m. at 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Portland.
I run around town, around, round, around with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around, round, around, round the town with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around town, around, round, around with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around, round, around, round the town with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever.
Shooting round the sticky bends, I hear a conversation in my head.
The Bike Show, coming to you live from the KBOO studios in Portland, Oregon. I'm Alex Zimmerman, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Tori Bortman. Morning, Tori.
Good morning, Alex.
Today, we're going to be talking about new bike technology that makes riding more connected, more accessible, and most importantly, more fun. In the first half of today's show, we'll be joined by Adam Vollmer of Faraday Bicycles to talk about their unique approach to designing a better e-bike. The second half of the show, we'll chat with Christy Jensen at Super Pedestrian, the makers of the Copenhagen Wheel, an all-in-one solution to bring the ease of e-biking to the bike you already have.
Originally from Portland, Adam Vollmer is the founder and CEO of Faraday Bicycles. Adam studied mechanical engineering at Stanford and MIT and brings years of expertise in medical device design and biotech, combined with a passion for designing products and services that responsibly address pressing human needs. In 2010, Adam co-hosted the Emmy Award-winning PBS Kids TV show Design Squad Nation, showcasing real kids using engineering and design to turn their dreams into reality. On July 19, 2012, Adam's dreams came true. Faraday Bicycles was founded and kickstarted and reached its funding goal within a week. Faraday continues to design exceptional electronic bicycles and believes that everyone deserves a commute that's efficient, healthy, sustainable, and fun. Welcome to the show, Adam Vollmer.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
We're glad to have you. So, Adam, where did the idea for Faraday Bicycles come from? What's the story behind the name?
The story behind the name is a great one. So we, Faraday, I guess, dates back to the time that I spent as a design engineer at a firm called IDEO down in Palo Alto, California. And we were challenged actually by a group in Portland to design the ultimate city bike. And we got really excited about the potential for electric. So electric motors, electric batteries, pedal assist, to make cycling more fun and accessible and less of a kind of a sweaty burden and really something that more people could do more often. So that was kind of the idea. And with this idea of building an electric bike, we we looked at Tesla, right, as an example of a company that I think has really, really broke some exciting ground in electric vehicle adoption. And we said, well, you know, Michael Faraday, another one of the greats of modern science, and the name wasn't taken. So we took it, and it fits us really well. It's
And for those of our listeners who don't know, who's Michael Faraday?
This gets a little nerdy, but so Michael Faraday was a late 1800s British physicist who kind of invented the modern electric motor. So kind of the motor that now powers our bike. He was the great-great-grandfather of that technology. But we really love, I think he's kind of an amazing story of a self-taught physicist and scientist, and just really an inspirational story, and it connects really well to the brand and the bikes.
Well, and it also seems like without him, a lot of things that we'd be doing these days wouldn't exist.
It would be a lot less fun. Yes, no bikes and very few electric parts.
Your first model, the Faraday Portier, launched on Kickstarter. What did you expect from that campaign? Where what were you hoping for? And did the results surprise you at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's so that was back in 2012. Kickstarter was pretty new at the time. And we, to be quite honest, I think we didn't know what to expect. It was e-bikes were really new in the U.S. Kickstarter as a platform was really new, and we didn't know what would happen if we went out and kind of put this novel idea.
How much were you asking for?
So we were pre-selling the bike. So they were $3,500, which is a lot. It's a big investment for a bike. And we were trying to raise $100,000. So definitely a really big ask. And we kind of hit that go button on Kickstarter and really held our breath and didn't know what to expect. And it was one of the coolest feelings ever when those pledges started coming in and people basically were signing up for this.
And where did they come in from? Idea.
They were from all over the place. It was, you know, we had folks in Portland and Seattle, California, but then just, you know, all corners of the U.S. The fun thing is I got to know a lot of these people personally and still keep in touch with a bunch of them. So we had people out in New Jersey. We had folks in Coos Bay. It was really just from all over the place. And, you know, people were finding us online and I think connecting with this idea of electric mobility done in a way that wasn't like this kind of ugly, kludgy thing, but it was light and beautiful and elegant. And,
And it sounds like, so you were mostly U.S. sales, because I know in Europe the e-bike has already kind of caught on, but for that first Kickstarter, you were just U.S. Is that correct? Adam?
Hello?
Well, it seems as if we might have lost Adam. But in the meantime, for those listeners who haven't ridden e-bikes a lot, I can talk a little bit about that. So if you're wondering what even is an e-bike is a bike with an electric assist motor, and it's either got a pedal assist, which means when you pedal, all of a sudden pedaling gets really easy automatically, which is pretty fun and nice. So if your pedals either slow down to a certain rotation or you're pushing hard enough, all of a sudden the pushing is much easier and it automatically can read that and know. And then there's also throttle e-bikes, which work a little more like a scooter, and you have an actual throttle on the handlebar that you pull. But those are not as popular anymore because now it's become really seamless to integrate those. And Alex, have you been on an e-bike?
I have, and I have actually been on a Faraday in particular, and it's a really nice experience. They've got kind of an eco mode and kind of a full boost and a half boost, so you can kind of choose the experience that you want to have. Maybe if you're on flat ground.
Hey, you're back.
Adam's back.
Hi, Adam.
I'm back. So sorry about that.
Just talking about e-bikes while you were gone.
Yeah, and I think you actually happen to be at Eurobike right now. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah, I'm driving around the German countryside right now.
So. Oh, beautiful.
And there's e-bikes everywhere here. It's really cool. I think this is one thing that you don't appreciate in the U.S., but when you come to Europe, you see it. Like, e-bikes are new here in the U.S., and they're really taking off. But you come to Europe, and they're just everywhere. And it's this really cool vision for what it looks like when these really get adopted.
And I'm not sure if you heard my last question, but what I left off that's the perfect segue is, like, what that first initial campaign that you had on Kickstarter was just in the U.S., correct?
It was. Yep, exactly. And we still primarily sell in the U.S. There's a lot of kind of complex logistics with getting bikes overseas.
And motors.
But also, I think there's a part of it, which is we really want to be a part of making e-bikes a phenomenon in the U.S. And so that's really our focus, kind of trying to pick our battles.
You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show, and we're talking with Adam Vollmer, the founder and CEO of Faraday Bicycles. Adam, so you're at Eurobike right now. Do you think that there's a difference in how folks in the U.S. versus folks in Europe are using e-bikes? What do you see in terms of a trend or the demographic of people using them?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think it's there certainly are differences. It's amazing in a lot of ways just how different it can be. For one thing, e-bikes have permeated just way more of the bike market here. So there's some crazy stats. I think you see as high as, in a lot of countries, Germany and the Netherlands, as high as, 20%, or even more in some cases, of all bikes sold now are electric, which
wow.
is pretty remarkable. Really hard to fathom. It's far smaller in the U.S., but again, growing really fast. But the, so you have, over here, you have e-mountain bikes, you have e-road bikes, obviously city and commuting. So it's really just, quite a lot more widespread, but outside of that, I think there are some really kind of common similarities, which is that you have people who are using e-bikes just around town for commuting, for running errands, for riding for fun on the weekends, and they're drawn to it again because it's easier and it's more fun. And I think there's a trend that you've seen in Europe, which is that it was originally a lot of older riders who kind of embraced e-bikes, maybe as their knees got...
Much like the U.S.
Knees got bad. Much like the U.S., similarly, yep, exactly. My folks, actually both in Portland, Oregon, both ride e-bikes, and they love it. But what's happened there, I think, is that has kind of grown, you see a much more diverse audience embracing e-bikes, and that's exciting. And I think that is happening and will continue to happen in the U.S. as well. So it becomes a really, it's not just for any particular person. Literally anybody can ride an e-bike, and our customers are really, really crazy diverse, which is really rewarding.
I found in my experience that the biggest kind of barrier is that people haven't ridden them. And when we suggest, I have too many bikes in my stable, but the one bike that's missing is an e-bike. Because there are times where I am a mile from the store, but I'm exhausted or it's late and I would rather ride, but I don't really want to ride. And that's when I want any. And so sometimes, for example, my partner's sister was thinking about getting a cargo bike, and we said,
yep.
She lives on a not a huge hill, but a little hill, and has a pretty good commute and is talking about hauling two kids. And we said,
it's a lot.
Where are you? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Both at daycare. And said, had you considered an e-bike? And she said, oh, why? Cheating, not getting my exercise, all those reasons that people give. And then we're like, just test ride one. And that was it.
Yeah.
She was hooked in a second.
And I felt similar a couple of years ago when I first heard about e-bikes. I was working at a university in their bike and pedestrian and transportation demand program. And I myself was like, oh, no, it's cheating. It's, or it's going too fast. We want to promote like a slower culture. But I've really come around since then, especially because I've ridden an e-bike here or there. And I can definitely see how for older folks or people with mobility issues.
Or as an other car.
Another
in our
car.
Our case,
yeah.
We're a one-car family,
yep.
And I would love to have that second quote-unquote car.
Or even those people who say that they can't bike commute because they can't get to work all sweaty. They need to look nice for meetings. They, when they get back home, it's an uphill commute, and they don't want to do that at the end of the day. I think that, we just need to do a little bit better job about promoting the e-bike, because I think that that might really be the solution that turns the switch on in their head that this is very possible now.
Well, I think you're totally right. And I have to say, it's really encouraging to hear both of you describe how you've come around on this, right? Because this is the process that we're having on a daily basis with consumers and customers who are like, yeah, it is cheating, or it is new, or it's different, or do I really need it? And, it takes experience of riding one for sure, but also experience of having friends and family members and neighbors say, I made the leap and it is fantastic. I would never go back.
Yes. And I would love to get my mom on one. My mom has a cute little hybrid that she puts on the bike rack on her car, and then she drives to a nice little paved trail, and she bikes around for 5-10 miles, and then she puts it back on the rack and drives home. And I kind of want to get her to the point where, you know, she's willing to go to the grocery store on the bike, or she's willing to get to the trail itself on the bike. And so I'm starting to think, you know, how can I, you know, push her a little in a comfortable way? And I'm talking to her a little bit more about the e-bike, and maybe that's something that you want to integrate into your life, to just go to the farmer's market. You know?
In my experience, if you can get somebody on it just mm-hmm. to test ride it,
it's super
sold.
Fun.
Sold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think two things happen when they have that test ride experience. One is, first off, it's incredibly fun, right? Like it's a really awesome experience, and it's amazing. Like, just so few people have had it. And the biggest thing I hear from people when they ride one is that literally the most common thing people say is, that's not what I expected. And I think people have an expectation that, you know, maybe it's going to be scary or overwhelming or like riding a motorcycle. And they come back with a big smile on their face, and they're like, oh, it's like riding a bike, but just, you know, 10 times as much fun. So people have, I think, in many cases, kind of misplaced expectation. And so getting them on changes that. And they realize that it's a bike, right? You really still have that experience of riding a bike. You can get exercise. You can actually get
yes.
You can turn the boost mode off and pedal and just turn it on when you need the help.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit? Alex was describing when we lost you there for a second, the different levels and why do you offer an eco mode, a boost mode, and what can you explain what those modes mean?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one thing maybe to kind of introduce that is we have kind of a design ethos, which is pretty unique to Faraday, which is we really, really pour a crazy amount of effort into making the bike really look and feel when you ride it like a bike. So we really don't want it to feel like this crazy, mechanical, overpowered, you know, motorcycle type thing. We want it to feel like a bike. So people often, you know, kind of really appreciate the fact that our bikes look like bikes. But when you ride them, I think it's the ride quality that's even more special. So kind of along those lines, you know, there's really no one kind of feel that's right for everybody on an e-bike. So a lot of the way an e-bike works is, you know, you pedal and then your power, your input to the pedals is amplified by the motor. And it's really all in software. You know, do we want a little bit of amplification? Do we want a lot? Do we want it to be aggressive or kind of mild? And it's all over the map. It's each their own. So it just, examples, you know, I like to ride around in kind of what I call our normal mode. So we have an off, turn the bike off and ride it with no power. We have kind of a normal mode or what we call boost mode, which is most power. And I like to ride in the normal mode. It's kind of a nice balance for me between kind of exercise and a little bit of help. We have, I would say, probably 2/3 of our office never rides in anything but boost mode. My girlfriend has literally never ridden in anything but boost mode. She just loves it. It makes her smile. It's great. So that's her style. My parents both like to ride it. I actually tuned their bikes down so they have less power. They really just want it just a little bit of help to kind of feel like they're riding a bike, but just take the edge off for their knees. So it's really, mm-hmm. really individual. And those modes let people really kind of tailor the ride to what they want when they want.
I admit. Oh, go ahead.
There's times for me leaving the office like late at night where I'm tired and I want to get home, and that's when I put it in boost mode.
Totally. I would too. Yeah.
Well, and I'm on a long-term recovery from a serious back injury, and I had an experience of going to Paris and riding an e-bike in Paris shortly after I was just able and cleared to ride a bike. And I couldn't really ride a bike, but I could ride an e-bike. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to do so. And it was funny, most of the time in Paris, it's pretty flat, eco mode was plenty. But when I was at a stop sign or stoplight and had to get into one of those giant roundabouts, boost,
yep.
straight into boost, and to get me into the traffic the way I needed to be. So I was somebody that actually at that point with an injury was going back and forth between the two. And that's what I love yep. it, that you can tailor it.
Yeah, and I found myself doing that too. When I test rode the Faraday, I would put it down to half mode or, you know, off completely. And then as I got to a stop sign, I would kind of just slow down, turn it up a little bit. And then so you don't have that big push where you kind of have to step off the saddle and forward that you see a lot of folks doing when they're learning how to use gears. This kind of takes all that away, and you just push your foot forward a tiny bit like you normally would, and the bike just goes. There's no like, oh, you know, I slowed down, I lost momentum. You just kind of casually keep rolling. It was really nice.
Yeah, thanks. No, it does. It takes the emphasis off the gears in a way, because you can kind of almost use the motor in place of that, and you don't have to get up and get out of the saddle and crank. And it's actually a lot safer too. You mentioned kind of pulling into the roundabout. We hear from people all the time who say, you know what, I get intimidated. I pull up to an intersection, maybe, or I'm crossing a street, and getting from zero up to speed when traffic is coming is scary. And an e-bike will really help you accelerate and take a lot of that intimidation off, which is, I think, a real legitimate benefit of e-bikes.
Well, speaking about using the motor as kind of a gear, something that's really new and all the rage in the bike world right now is wireless shifting, you know, DI2, ETAP. Do you ever see Faraday moving in that direction, maybe playing around a little bit more with kind of that seamless experience?
You know, it's funny. I've got a bunch of friends with wireless shifting on their bikes, and I'm kind of a holdout. I've got an old 9-speed bike with old fashioned cables, but I think probably not. I think, quite honestly, we really try to look carefully at kind of how people are using our bikes and what the needs of our riders are, and also be cognizant too that e-bikes are expensive for a lot of people. And so if we're gonna ask somebody to spend, you know, a lot of money and make a big investment in a really quality bike, we want to make sure we're putting that money where it's going to have the most benefit, kind of the most impact for our particular rider. And so that for us is things like really high quality batteries, really good durable long lasting parts, you know, a really good motor that's going to have high efficiency and that kind of thing. And so it's not that I think, you know, technically we really geek out on and we love stuff like wireless shifting, but when we look at kind of the needs of our rider and kind of the cost benefit, it's probably not on our roadmap.
Speaking of which, I mean, you started in 2012. There's got to be innovations that you've included or upgrades you've made to the bikes as time has gone on. Can you talk about any of those?
Yeah, for sure. It's a never-ending process. And I think we've certainly kept pace with battery development. So as lithium batteries have progressed, we sort of keep up with the latest and greatest state of the art in terms of high capacity batteries. So it's exciting to see the bike kind of progress in that way.
And what's changed in batteries?
Just the capacity. So the amount of charge, basically, that you get out of a given kind of form factor or volume of a battery has sort of steadily progressed over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 years.
Where was it, and where has it come?
It was, so to kind of throw an example, we had a 240 watt hour pack, which is a measurement of the size of the battery, which meant you could ride about probably 18 to 20 miles on our kind of first bike, and now that's jumped up to 306.
That's crazy.
So really nice. So kind of just, you know, overnight our bikes went to 25 miles range, which was great, you know, really nice functional benefit for our riders. So,
what about lightness of the battery? Has that changed at all, or is that coming?
That hasn't changed. That it's more you take the same weight and size, and you get more capacity for it. But that does mean that you can progressively use less and less battery to get the same range. I think one thing we do that's pretty unique with Faraday, we make a really light e-bike. So for an e-bike, our bikes are about 40 pounds roughly.
Wow,
took the electronics away.
That's the same as a lot of hybrids out there.
Well, or a bike share bike is about 35, 40 pounds probably.
Yeah, exactly. Those bikes are heavy. No, it's funny that we were in Amsterdam recently with the show here, and all the Dutch bikes on the streets, I think, weigh more than our bikes without a motor. So it's a pretty manageable weight. We think that's a pretty important thing too, that, you know, you're in a city especially, you're going to be moving the bike around, getting it up on a curb, parking it, locking it, maybe taking it in an apartment or a home, and you know, a 50, 60-pound bike is a lot to manage, so we really, really, really emphasize the weight. So our battery is actually, we have, I would say, that probably the most compact, highest energy density battery on the market. We're pretty proud of that. We don't brag about it a lot, but we're actually pretty proud about our battery tech.
Well, it's the most important thing that differentiates an e-bike from a bike. So you can toot your own horn about that.
And you guys also have some really cool customizable options. I've seen, you know, there's different racks and fenders. Can you talk a little bit about some of the features of the bike? I know that there's a lighting system built in. I think that's pretty unique as well.
Yeah, totally. This is fun in a way. It goes back to that original design contest that we built a bike for in Portland back in 2011, where the goal of the contest was to make a utility bike. So, you know, not necessarily, you mentioned a cargo bike earlier that could fit two kids. That's an example of that. We wanted to build a more kind of utilitarian day-to-day bike, not a dedicated cargo bike, but still make it a really, really practical vehicle. So for us, that means things like built-in lights. And so when you have a huge battery in the bike, it's one of the coolest features of the bike is the lights are built into the frame. You can't steal them, but they're always on. So any time of day or night, it's almost no drain on the battery, but you get these really, really, really bright lights, which are great for safety, for seeing where you're going. So that's an awesome benefit of the way we build our bikes. Fenders, Portland, it's a rainy town. You can appreciate that. So we have fenders on all the
bikes.
We
wish it was a rainier town right now, actually.
Yeah, right now we could use it.
Is it kind of a dry spell right now?
Actually, we can't breathe.
There's a big, and you may not have talked to your folks because you're abroad about it, but we have a huge wildfire in the gorge right now. So the air quality in Portland is smoky, full of ash, pretty unhealthy levels. So.
30,000 acres of wildfire started in Eagle Creek and has grown that big since Saturday.
Yes.
So.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So do a little rain dance over there.
Yes.
The irony right now is that as you were describing the built-in lights, I was wishing this morning that I had lights because it's
smoggy.
It's really hard to see because of the amount of smoke and ash in the air.
It'd be nice to have the boost mode too. I have not been biking or running for 2 days and I'm going crazy.
Yeah, they're asking people not to exercise outside. So this is also just yet another example of when e-bikes really come in handy.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that sounds borderline apocalyptic. I hope that clears up.
I think that would be an appropriate description. It's borderline apocalyptic.
It's very weird to see, you know, it's very, very strange right now in Portland. But anyway, so you were saying built-in lighting system.
When the rain does come,
fenders. And racks too. So we sell, I think, probably half or maybe even three quarters of our bikes we sell with one or other or both of a front or rear rack. So people are really, and I love this, you know, it's not a frivolous thing that people are buying just for kicks. People are, you know, they're carrying their kids, they're carrying the groceries or their backpack, or if they're going on just a casual ride, they're carrying a water bottle and some lunch. But the racks are a pretty integral part of making the bikes a really useful thing. And so we have some nice options for customizing it and making it feel very personal. And that's, you know, it's funny that I think that's for a city bike, that's like the equivalent of electric shifting, right? Like that's the cool thing to geek out on is how cool are the accessories, right? And we sort of embrace that and have a lot of fun with it.
What about, this is an odd question that just came up in my mind because of thinking of racks and extra added weight. Is there a weight limit to the battery working
efficiency, maybe?
There's not a limit per se. I mean, you know, we occasionally have folks who, you know, ask if they can haul a 300 pound load. We caution them that might not be the best idea, but you know, generally
well, I'm thinking more, let's say somebody's 250 or 260 pounds and wants to get into cycling,
totally doable.
Yes,
totally doable.
Great.
A heavier rider or somebody, you know, a lightweight rider carrying a lot of weight will get less range out of the bike. It's just the same way if you pile a bunch of stuff in your car and drive, your fuel economy will go down. So there is that effect. You know, my girlfriend weighs less than I do, and she can go farther in a charge. But you know, that's a kind of a minor, a secondary effect. And generally, we have folks of all shapes and sizes riding our bikes for sure. And a lot of them are getting back into cycling, just like you mentioned. So we say bring it on.
So this is actually a super bike nerdy nerd thing to talk about, and I just wanted to touch on it really quickly. You guys have Paul Sadoff of Rock Lobster involved in the design process. Is he still involved at all?
That is super bike nerdy, and I love it. Paul was an instrumental part of kind of getting the original design off the ground, and he's not involved anymore. Although we keep tabs on him. We actually were down in Santa Cruz a couple of months ago and dropped by and paid him a visit to the shop and had him ride the latest bikes and just checked in. So he built the very first bike that we ever built for the design contest, and I really credit Paul for a lot of good ideas and also as we were building an e-bike, which was something that he, as a pretty hardcore cyclist, was not philosophically thrilled about.
Interesting.
He kept us honest. He made us make a really, really good bike, first and foremost. And I think that it shows in the DNA of the bike and the fact that it rides as well as it does, with or without the motor. So Paul gets a big shout out from us for his role in that.
Excellent. Well, I think we need to wrap up on this segment, but Adam, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. This is Adam Vollmer with Faraday Bicycles. And if our listeners want to find out a little bit more about Faraday, how can they find that information?
Well, a couple great options. Certainly our website, which is faradaybikes.com, has lots of useful info. And we have a handful of wonderful dealers in Portland, mm-hmm. Clever Cycles, Gladys Cycles, and Western Bike Works. So by all means, the best thing far and away is visit one of our great shops, and they would be happy to get you on a test ride and tell you more. And they're a great resource. So
great. Well, it has been so great having you here with us today. Enjoy the rest of your time in Europe.
Thanks so much, Adam.
Thanks so much. Thank you both. This is a pleasure. Happy riding.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show, and we will be back soon. This is KBOO.FM and 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for the second half of our show, where we will continue to explore new avenues of bike technology with the Copenhagen Wheel. Don't touch that dial.
Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show here in Portland, Oregon, broadcasting at 90.7 FM. We're joined for the second half of our show by Christy Jensen, partner coordinator at Super Pedestrian, the inventors of the Copenhagen Wheel. Christy is a bike industry veteran, having worked in various shop roles and with industry leaders such as Competitive Cyclist and Specialized. She's dedicated to helping get people on bikes, which is why she loves e-bikes so much. She loves all kinds of bikes, but she's especially keen on riding her Metro Fiat's cargo bike, which is a super nerdy and super cool bike to have. Christy, thank you for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the Copenhagen Wheel. We spent the first half of the show talking about an e-bike that's kind of the complete package, but from what I understand, the Copenhagen Wheel works with the system that you already have. How did that idea come about?
Well, and can you just describe what the Copenhagen Wheel is for our listeners?
Yeah, totally. So the Copenhagen Wheel is a pedal assist wheel that fits on any rim brake bike. So it turns your existing bike into a pedal assist bike. There's no external wiring harnesses or anything that you have to add to your bike besides a rear wheel. And it pairs with your smartphone as the controller.
Very cool.
Your smartphone.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What does that even look like?
Yeah, so you download an app because there's an app for everything.
Oh, absolutely.
And your app allows you to claim ownership of your wheel. So basically acts as a security device. But it also allows you to track all of your ride data. You select your ride mode. And then you can also, decide how fast you want the wheel to go. So the wheel now goes up to 25 miles an hour, but you can also adjust it down so it only assists you up to 15 miles an hour. So it really allows you to play with your wheel and customize it a little bit.
Can you change it ride to ride if you want?
Or can you change it in the middle
exactly.
of a ride?
So it does not allow you to change it while you're riding, which is a nice safety feature.
Yes, I didn't think you were, I was hoping. But could you pull over and stop and change it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and you can change modes. So you have four modes, that assistance modes that you can choose from. And so you can always change those while you're riding, depending on how much assist you want. So one thing to note about the Copenhagen Wheel, though, is because it is torque-based assist, it still feels like you when you ride. You just sort of feel like you have a tailwind the entire time. So it only assists you while you're pedaling. Other than that, it's just like riding a bike.
What are the four modes? Do they come kind of standard and you can customize your speed within them, or is changing your speed a separate mode that you can add on?
So changing your speed is it's a separate setting. But the four modes are turbo, because we're Americans, we like to go fast. And then standard mode, eco mode, you can ride with it off. And then we also have an exercise mode, which is a regenerative mode.
Oh, interesting.
So you can make it extra hard.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how does the Copenhagen wheel work? Is it a battery?
Yeah, so your rear wheel contains your motor, your battery, and your sensors, all inside. So your battery, obviously, you do have to charge it with a wall charger to get full power. But those sensors that are housed in it are sensing both your speed and then the amount of torque that you're putting on your cassette to determine how much assistance you need and when.
Interesting. So can it sense, for example, when you start going uphill or if you've slowed down over the past minute? And then how does it adjust? Does it feel kind of seamless? Or
it feels absolutely seamless. It's kind of crazy. Like the first time I hit a hill when I was riding home, like my second day of work, I was like, oh, okay, I'm approaching a hill, and you know, went to kind of step down on the pedals a little bit more, and it just immediately was like, nope, you're on a hill. I know I need to assist you. And it just felt completely flat.
That's very cool.
That's the dream.
Yeah, that is nice.
How much, so we talked a little bit with our last guest, Adam Vollmer, about weight of his bike. And how much does the wheel itself actually weigh?
So a complete wheel is going to weigh about 17 pounds.
Okay, so not too big of an add-on.
So you're adding maybe 15 pounds to the weight of your bike.
You're adding 17 overall, I guess.
Right. Well, but if you had a wheel on there normally, I was like, well, but the wheel.
Right. The wheel itself.
Any wheel is going to weigh, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 pounds. So, unless,
totally.
Well, most wheels. Unless
I don't
you have
know.
A really
I have a
fancy.
Hub.
Right.
That
unless
might
you have
be extra.
A dynamo hub or something that's super fancy that you can lift with your finger. But those being maybe. So speaking of which, I was going to say those are kind of outside the realm maybe a little bit of what you'd normally use this wheel for. What do you think most people buy the Copenhagen wheel for? Do they buy it for their road bike? Do they buy it for their commuter bike? What are they looking at?
Oh, man, it's been really great to see what bikes people put the wheel on. We see all of the above, but a lot of people are putting it on their daily rider. Or if they had a bike that would, like, we jokingly say that we are, you know, a Bridgestone dealer, haha, because we've seen so many people put our wheels on their old Bridgestones, and they just look absolutely beautiful. But we've also seen a lot of people who are like, I want to be able to ride around my city every day, and so they are putting it on their daily commuters. And then, of course, there are people who are like, I just can't ride like I used to, and they put it on, you know, their custom frame. We had a customer who got a mosaic made just for his Copenhagen wheel.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Is that the best kind of most unique setup you've seen, or what are some other, has anyone put it on something kind of super old and classic or more custom, or are you seeing a lot of people just kind of swap it out onto, you know, just a stock bike?
We are seeing, you know, we're seeing a wide variety of all of them. We've had a lot of people who have wanted to, they're like, you know, our big assumption was people are going to want to put it on their existing bike. And a lot of people do, but we also have people who want to put it on a brand new bike because they're like, oh, if I'm going to buy this wheel, I want it to be on something that, you know, is awesome. And so we have started partnering with OEM dealers to provide that for people. So we've seen a lot of people who want Marins, who we're partnering with, as well as Public and Papillionaire. But as far as unique builds go, I think the most unique that we're about to see actually is one of our shops that does restorations is putting a wheel on like an old classic Dutch bike that he's restoring. So I think that's going to be really cool to see.
Very cool. Yeah, that seems like kind of the ideal utility, best of both worlds setup. You have this beautiful commuter designed to, you know, take it a little bit easy, and then you've got this new technology that helps you take it even easier.
Can you put it on a cargo bike?
You could, yeah. I mean, you are limited by the weight, which is it can handle up to 320 pounds.
Okay.
But you can absolutely put it on a cargo bike. One of our partner shops that we work with, Firth and Wilson Transit Cycles in Philadelphia, is putting it on one of their in-house made cargo bikes. So I'm very excited to see what that looks like. And then in-house, we also have it on a Yuba. And that's been really fun to ride around.
And I'm assuming it's kind of a little bit technical to install. So it's not a wheel that you can really like put from bike to bike easily.
You can, actually. And that's what makes it so great, is that you can, you know, we have couples that share wheels because they both have a 9-speed setup on both of their bikes. And because it installs just like a coaster brake bike, it's really easy to swap it, and it takes about 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's not bad at all. And then do you need to reconfigure anything with the app or the gearing, or it just kind of recognizes where it's installed and that's kind of native to its setup?
Yeah, it doesn't even require any like new calibration or anything, because it's all torque based. Mm-hmm. You don't have to tell it how many speeds are on your cassette or anything like that.
Wow, that's pretty.
That's very cool.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. And where we talked a little bit with Adam about, he's in Eurobike right now in Europe. Mm-hmm. And who are you selling this wheel to? I mean, it's called the Copenhagen wheel. Mm. So I would assume maybe some of your sales are in Europe, but maybe I'm guessing wrong. Maybe it just sounds European.
So we are distributing in Europe, all across the US and Canada right now. So we're available in many places. The name actually comes from what the wheel was developed for. So the wheel was developed at MIT in the Sensible Cities Lab, which tries to create solutions for cities. And the wheel was created for the Global Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen, and was sponsored by the city of Copenhagen. So that's kind of how the project came about. And when Super Pedestrian was formed, the name stuck. So,
is anyone from that original team of inventors still with Super Pedestrian, or are they involved kind of on, you know, the next iteration of the wheel or tweaking it?
Yeah, so our CEO, Asaf Biederman, he is one of the co-inventors of the wheel.
Excellent.
Well, so he's still working on tweaking it or improving it.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
What kind of improvements is he making or have been made over the last few years?
Is there a wheel 2.0, or, you know, what are we thinking we'll see from it in the future?
Yeah, so right now, we're only rim brake compatible. So for 2018, we're really shooting for disc brake compatibility, since that's just where the bike industry is trending.
Mm-hmm.
So one really exciting thing we did recently introduce was e-braking. So you can now, your wheel, when you back pedal like you would with a coaster brake,
mm-hmm. What?
It will brake. Yeah.
That is so interesting. So if you've got it on a rim brake bike, you can still just kind of instinctively backpedal a bit, maybe if you see a car pull out ahead of you or something, and it'll slow you down a bit.
And is that something you can turn on and off?
Exactly. You can turn it on and off. You can adjust just how much braking force it's giving you. So if you want it to be just a little bit, you can have it. You know, if you want it to be a ton of braking force, you can set it like that. So it's really cool. I find when I'm riding like my cross bike, I'll like instinctively just like backpedal. I'm like, nope, that's not how that works.
Nope. Good try though.
Right.
Disc brake in 2018 would be amazing. I know a lot of our commuter bikes in my house are disc brake now because of Portland's weather. Mm-hmm. And the ability to stop is really great with disc brakes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's great to hear that you guys are going in that direction.
Would that change the cost of the wheel, or do you guys feel like you need to keep it at a certain price point? And what even is that price point? How accessible is this technology to people if they're putting it on a bike they already have?
Yeah, so the wheel costs $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're getting is a complete wheel. So you're getting a cassette on it. You're getting a tube and tire. So when you get your Copenhagen wheel, it is ready to be installed on your bike.
Great. And then if you don't, is it possible to, I guess, kind of have the smartphone connected to it while you're biking? Do you guys sell like a mount to make it any easier so folks can kind of go back and forth between modes? Or are there any other accessories that come with the wheel?
The smile that is going to be on your face is sold separately. No, we actually don't sell a mount for your phone. I mean, there's a couple that we recommend to people, like Quadlock and the Fin mount made by Citizen are two that I tend to really gravitate towards. But the nice thing about the app is it's really meant to be like a set it and forget it kind of thing. So you can set your mode, stick your phone in your pocket, ride. So there isn't a huge need to adjust modes while you're riding. Some people do find that they want to be able to, you know, go between turbo and standard or eco and standard. But the joy of it being torque-based assist and it being such a smart system is that you really don't need to change your modes all that much.
Do you see anything else in the app for the future, maybe security features? You mentioned that the wheel kind of, it has to recognize your phone, and so that way you can change the modes. Is that something where you could maybe lock up the bike and turn the wheel off? And then, you know, if someone did steal it, potentially they wouldn't be able to get the wheel to work without logging in on that app or doing whatever it needs to do to recognize it.
Yeah, so because it recognizes your account that's in the app, if someone were to steal your wheel, they would not be able to use it.
Right. Is there a function right now, kind of like if I lost my iPhone and I go to find my iPhone, I can lock the iPhone? Can you lock the wheel so it can't spin?
We don't have that security feature yet.
Yet. I was like, I bet you that's coming.
I can't make any forward-facing statements about it, but it's, you know, it's something that would be really cool to have.
Yeah. Well, so it seems like if you could put a coaster brake in.
Right. Or if it's, you know, if you need to link it to the app to recognize it, you should be able to disable it for security purposes.
Yeah, well, you can right now disable it, but yeah, it would be
that
cool
would be
if you'd
fun.
Like, sorry, you're not going anywhere. Good
or maybe
luck.
If it could text you, if it's on the move without you somehow, send it
Ooh, yeah, that
a
would
text
be
to
nice.
Your phone, like, your bike is going away without you.
That would actually be amazing.
Yeah, there are some bike security, I think there's like a little chip that you can put in the down tube, and it, you know, if it's jostled, it will send a text to your phone. But then, you know, if someone locks up next to you, that often jostles the bike. So it's not a perfect system.
Yeah.
But something as sophisticated as the wheel, it sounds like you could really kind of GPS locate it or turn it off if you're going to be away from it for a while. And that, I think that would appeal to a lot of commuters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And it's, I mean, it's already such a great system. And so right now, can I get that wheel in different wheel sizes? How does that work?
Yeah, so the two wheel sizes that we come in are 700C and 26. So because of the size of the hub that houses, you know, your motor and your battery and everything, it's really hard to go smaller than 26.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever see 650B is a size that we're seeing kind of come back in vogue right now in addition to 29ers.
Yes.
People are seeing, mm-hmm. you know, more and more adventure bikes with these sizes. Do you think that Copenhagen Wheel will continue to expand its offerings?
I can definitely see us expanding our offerings for sure in the future. Yeah, I mean, 650B is, like you said, it's becoming in vogue, but it's also becoming, you know, one of the new standards.
Mm-hmm.
And not just for, you know, for a while it was mountain biking, that 650B was great, but also we're seeing a lot of road bikes come back, especially for smaller riders.
Mm-hmm.
That 650B wheel size just absolutely makes sense.
And I think we're seeing a lot of the 650B as well on touring bikes, because you can kind of get a larger, plusher tire, but you still get a really, really good efficiency with it. Do you ever see people using the app for the Copenhagen Wheel? You said you can track your ride data. Are people using it kind of like a Garmin? Are people touring on it, or would it be possible to kind of use it as, you know, there are some websites like Ride with GPS, Map My Ride. Do you ever see compatibility with those, or do you see the wheel going in that direction?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think that being able to link our system with other systems would be fantastic.
What kind of information can you track right now with it?
So right now you can track, you can track exactly where you rode in your city. So it has that map feature. You can also track what your average speed was, what the wheel's output was, and what your output it was. You have a power meter.
So almost like a Garmin, like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got this power meter built into your pedal assist wheel. So that's kind of nice because there aren't a whole lot of e-bikes that have a power meter in them. So you can look at all of that data. You can also look at what your elevation change was. So it's got a couple of really fun and great things in it. Your app will also tell you how many hours you've ridden your wheel, what your overall mileage is, how many trips you've taken.
What kind of maintenance does the wheel need? And does the app give you a little, you've ridden 10,000 miles,
right,
it's time
to
take
it
your
overhauled.
Wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is something we're working on incorporating into it, is like, you know, your maintenance schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But the wheel does require a little bit of maintenance, so we do recommend that it is trued every 3 to 6 months, depending on how much you're riding. And, you know, just keeping it clean, obviously. I think that's something as commuters we always have trouble doing, is
yes.
making sure our bikes are clean and well maintained.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I always recommend to people just treat it like you do the rest of your bike, which is treat it nicely. And keep it clean. So,
would a regular shop be able to service it if anything were to go wrong? Do they need to order a part from you, or is it something that, you know, you'd have to ship back to Super Pedestrian?
So anything that's outside of the wheel, so like spoke replacement or rim replacement, a shop can absolutely do the work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the internals, the wheel does have to come back to us for service. That's kind of like a two-part thing. One, bike shops aren't equipped to be electricians.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a shop try to diagnose electrically what's going on with the wheel is unfair.
Right. It sounds almost like a car dealership where they've got, you know, the computer and all of its diagnostic codes. And, you know, most bike shops aren't set up for anything like that.
Exactly. And one of the great things about the wheel is that when your phone's connected to your wheel, it will tell you if there is something wrong with it. So if you're getting,
that's nice.
If a 410 code is showing up, you know, that has a meaning. If it's overheating, it's going to tell you, it's going to say, hey, I'm overheating. There are a lot of diagnostic codes that can pop up if something's wrong, so that you're not riding a wheel that has potential to be damaged because you didn't know.
Okay. And then would you call Super Pedestrian and say, oh, my wheel sent me a message, you know, 410.
Exactly.
What does that mean? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Does it actually need to be overhauled occasionally?
So, occasionally it will need to be overhauled. You know, the battery lasts for 1,000 charge cycles, which is about 3 years. So after that 1,000 charge cycles, you're going to have a decreased battery life by 20%. A lot of people will want to get their battery ring replaced mm-hmm. after 3 years, which is totally doable. So,
but the hub itself doesn't need, like the bearings inside it don't need to be overhauled?
Not on a super regular basis, no.
Okay. And if it does need to be overhauled, is that also something that needs to be sent back to you, or is that something a shop can do?
So that is something that has to come back to us.
That's what I figured.
Okay.
And how often do you recommend that that happen?
You know, we don't have a current, like, hey, send it back once a year. We are still pretty new to the market. So we started shipping last year, late last year. So there's a lot that we're really confident that.
Yeah, as a bicycle mechanic, this is mm-hmm. my questions coming out of,
totally.
Well,
yeah.
Especially if it's a commuter wheel, it's going to take
right.
more wear and tear. from stopping and starting and all that. So those tend to be...
Well, and Christy, I know you travel kind of all over the country going to shops and kind of introducing them to this wheel. Have you run into any shops or distributors saying, you know, we don't want to take this on because it seems like technology we're not familiar with, or are folks generally excited to embrace it?
You know, a lot of folks are really excited to embrace it. There was one shop that told me that they believe that bikes should run off of burritos, not batteries. And I was like, why not both? You know?
Yeah. Like, well, and if it's a pedal assist, it is both, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, so overall, I would say that a lot of shops are really excited to embrace what is on the horizon for cycling.
And it's so clearly on the horizon with the amount, you know, Adam Vollmer had given us a number of 20% approximately of the bikes in Europe are now being sold, that are being sold, period, are now e-bikes. Mm-hmm. And it's coming. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and I think as our generation ages too, we want to keep biking. And so I think we're seeing that shift here as well, that Europe's already embraced as older generation people with kids really, really adapting this into their everyday life. It's mm-hmm. not just like this cool new tech, like a new iPhone.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even in my, I've been a bike commuter for years, but moving to Boston, I don't own a car anymore, and having a pedal assist wheel makes a huge difference in the distance I can bike every day, and I'm not totally wearing myself out.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples of like your distances, how that's changed, or some example, like real world examples of how that looks for you?
Yeah, totally. So like when my friends come to town and they're like, I want to hit up Cambridge and Somerville and go to the JFK library, you know, being able to do a loop around the city through all of the boroughs of Boston is about 20 miles. So if you were doing that on public transit and walking, it would take you a while.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to just ride a Copenhagen wheel, you're able to do that 20 miles. And for someone who isn't familiar with a city, and maybe isn't a really strong rider, having that wheel to assist them makes them feel more confident in traffic. You're able to move at 20 miles an hour. So you're moving a little bit closer to the speed of traffic. And, you know, you can hit up all of these cool touristy spots. And by the end of the day, you're not
have to find
totally
parking.
Right. And you're not tired. You know, my mom rides, but she's not a super strong rider. And I can never convince her to ride with me because she'd have to take a bike share bike. And she's like, oh, you know, it's just a little too heavy and it's kind of clunky. But I could definitely see it being handy for a guest, especially if you can swap it back and forth between bikes.
Totally. Yeah, it's really convenient. And I mean, for me, just being able to... you know, bike to different parts of the city, whether I'm like running errands or wanting to hang out with friends, or, you know, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
On a hot, muggy, summery day, it can feel a little exhausting to bike, you know, even 5 miles when it's 90 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. So being able to have the wheel to get you there a little bit faster and have that added breeze really feels nice.
Mm-hmm,
but
right.
It's also, you know, you're getting there faster. So.
Well, and you can carry home as many burritos as you want.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I've even been amazed at some of the stuff that I've been able to carry on my bike because I'm not, you know, putting a ton of power down and I'm able to rely on the wheel. Like, I went and picked up like 4 plastic tubs and just strapped into my rack. And I was like, man, if I was, and I had one hand on them the whole time, but had I just had to pedal the entire way up this hill, it would have been really uncomfortable to also have my hand, you know, on the plastic tubs and mm-hmm. trying to pedal hard and shift, whereas having the wheel, it's adding that power, getting me up the hill.
That's awesome. Well, I think we are almost out of time here, but thank you so much for joining us today, Christy. This is Christy Jensen from Super Pedestrian, the inventors of the Copenhagen wheel. And if our listeners want to find out more about it, where can they do that?
Yeah, so we've got 3 partner shops in Portland: Clever Cycles, 21st Ave Bikes, and Gladys Bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can stop by any of those shops, ask questions, take the wheel out for a spin, and even order a bike or a wheel through any of those shops.
Very cool. Well, I mean, Tori and I may just have to head over to one of those shops after the show.
Do it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Christy.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the KABOO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of the month. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are archived at thebikeshow.portland.transport.com. The Bike Show is also produced by Alon Rav and Terry Campbell.
We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Derek, and we will be back on next month with more stories from the bike world. Stay tuned for more great radio here at KABOO, and make it a great day.
KBOO Portland.
It's time for the KABOO News at Noon for Wednesday, September 6, 2017. In Portland, hundreds of people filled Terry Schrunk Plaza to protest the Trump administration's announcement to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, which would put 800,000 undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children at risk for deportation unless Congress passes new protections within the next 6 months, said Oregon's Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum of taking legal action on behalf of Oregon's estimated 11,000 people protected under DACA provisions, quote, "We're working to create something that we feel will succeed that is appropriate under the law." Former President Barack Obama released a statement urging the White House to reconsider, saying, "Ultimately, this is about basic decency." In local news, the Eagle Creek fire continues to rage in the Columbia Gorge, as the blaze is now at the 20,000-acre mark after merging with the former Indian Creek fire. And while the fire did jump the Columbia River, it was contained to about 30 acres, officials say. The 15-year-old suspect, who is believed to have set off the fireworks responsible for sparking the blaze, could be charged as an adult, said an Oregon State Police spokesman. And as a reported inch of ash has fallen from the Portland area,